we met at a really weird sleepover, right? Wasn't it like a weird?
It was. I'm not gonna lie. I was a little worried driving there. I just didn't know what to expect.
We have become pretty good friends over the course of this year, and you've had a lot of interviews out there and a lot of people who talk to you about your story and stuff like that. I don't want to be kind of repetitive with things, but I've become I've been blessed with meeting you and kind of talking to you and kind of like comparing wounds and the like. And we've become pretty good friends.
Yeah.
We met at this house in Ensenada, right? This fucking mansion. Nothing squirrely was going on?
Nothing.
Just a bunch of masked individuals and guns and shit going on. We were working on this project that is going on that might go on to show up somewhere as a show.
Mm-hmm.
But the premise there was like our mutual friend Conejo kind of gathered some of his friends and people that he knows were interesting.
His pistoleros.
which is a fucking big honor that the legend motherfucking Conejo said, like, who are the hardest court guys, you know? And like, I was in the fucking mix somehow.
Yeah.
I'm a dork, dude.
Nah.
But all of us basically congregated on this house and had this spent all night basically talking in front of cameras about some of the stories and some of the things that made us who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I didn't know a lot about you when I met you. I had seen you online. I'd seen some of the conversations we've had in clips and kind of heard some of your story. There's a few people out there talking about prison culture and some of the stuff that goes on in and out of prison, some of the criminal culture, but they talk about it in a way that is more, I don't know, like entertainment based, I guess. So, which is fine. I don't have that life experience myself. I don't want to have it. So, but when I heard you speak about it, though, you spoke about it in a very different context, more like a warning, this dire warning. Where has your experience led you? Like you're working on a shit ton of projects now. You're fucking hustling like a motherfucker, and I see you constantly out there working. But what makes you go from that life to this one where you're creating, teaching, guiding? And when before, like I've seen some of the stories and heard some of that shit. You had a wild fucking life. What happens to break that?
You know, I tell people I got a little too comfortable going to prison, like a little too used to it. And I start seeing my life, like I start seeing it as a career. I always tell people like, that's what I thought I was going to do for the rest of my life. And as I started getting older and I started learning more what prison really was and just the violence and just everything, one day I was tired and I was just like, okay, I want to change, but I didn't know how.
You have people that live that life and the adrenaline, and then, you know, I had some of that, but in a different context. The whole aspect of it, it's impossible that my life can be anything other than, you know, you have a baseline. Like, I remember for me, it was realizing that I didn't have any more. Like, I used to carry around two phones and a radio and guns and fucking sub gun and a backpack and. And all of a sudden, I don't have anything. I'm naked.
Yeah.
And that's my identity, though, or the fact that I always had an excuse to ghost my family.
Sounds like my story,
right? And you have to come up, when all that shit is taken from you and you have to come up with a new way of basically, you know, getting those, I don't know, people talk about endorphins or, I don't know, for me, it's like getting a new purpose to get out of bed every day, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
But there's a breaking point. There's a fucking breaking point there, though.
And I want to say that my breaking point was when I got to that USP in California and they had just stabbed that guy because, like, I had been living that life for so many years.
For people that don't know, when you say USP?
It's just, like, super max. Like, it's the one that has that's real big concrete wall. There's no fences.
Yeah.
It's a big concrete wall.
When you get there, are you aware that of the nature of the severity of the environment you're about to step in? Is it told to you?
You know, you feel it because when the bus gets there, it gets to two mediums before it hits the USP. And I remember being on the bus and it stopped at the first one, Victorville medium. Dropped off some of the guys. Stopped at the second one. Dropped off the rest of the guys. By then, I was already like, I'm not going to lie. You know, a lot of people like to say that they weren't scared. I was terrified. I was
What does your body do when you're afraid? Like, people, I always ask this because people have different response. Like, fear does different things for our bodies. We react differently, right?
Yeah.
What is fear like for you in a moment like that? Is it tension?
For me, it's always been... I put on the best acting roles that I can, man.
You mask.
Yeah.
You fucking mask.
And I'm great at it. You know, it's what helped me survive some of the most dangerous places I was at.
Yeah. Just and when you say dangerous places, your childhood. we'll get there. I know it's at the beginning, mm-hmm. but it's a pretty good place to start to end. I think we'll talk about that later. Fear response for me is. Awareness, like a hyper awareness about where the next
spider senses.
Yeah, everything just activates. You know, I'll see this motherfucker has a ring. This fucker over here has a limp. This guy over here has a tattoo. It's Salvadorian. The door you can open, that and that mix can make fucking mustard gas, whatever that is for me. But that is trauma based because I'm unsafe. So I need to figure out ways of making myself safe.
Yeah.
For you, it's. Like a mask.
Yeah.
And when you say acting, like, what are you, who are you pretending to be?
I mean, I'm pretending to be the most meanest, ugliest,
murderous motherfucker out there.
You know, and the way you walk, the way you turn, the way you look at people, everything counts because, like, you're putting on the best performance.
And that's basically an emulation of people that you've encountered throughout your life that you're like, this is shit that I'm interested in, you know. The eye contact is between men in an environment like that fucking thing is dangerous as shit. You can feel
the tension,
dude. You staring at a dude in an environment like that, it's enough to kill somebody.
Yep.
Right? That stare, and also like things that you wouldn't recognize as threat indicators, but somebody with a smile and those fucking eyes staring right through you.
Mm-hmm. Like everything, even your jawbones, how your hands are, everything.
And that is one of our most primal and natural states. Like that is at the base of our biology in a lot of ways. So when we talk about, I don't know, like the human experience or part of the human experience, most of in the past that was very part and parcel of it.
Mm-hmm.
Adopting a mask, you could see it in different places.
You know, growing up in Chicago, the way I grew up, were you know they were moving me around so much. Every 3 months, I was at a different family member's house. You know, I was in very different, dangerous neighborhoods, so I had to be a chameleon, and I had to blend in. If I had to act black, I would act black. If I had to act white, I would act white. Whatever I had to do, but it was all like
adaptation to survival.
I mean, it was adaptation, yeah, it was survival. But I always looked at it as like, man, one day I'm gonna be like an actor, man.
In your mind, you're like, hey, I'm getting really good at this fucking whole fucking shifting personality.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's why a bunch of those fucking actors are a bunch of criminals too, you know. it's probably related, mm-hmm. I imagine. Trauma and being able to adapt like a persona like that. Like, I know that basically trauma produces a few things, you know. It produces great actors, you know. Yeah. It produces career criminals.
Great cops.
It produces a lot of interesting characters. But one of the commonalities that I've seen, specifically when it's like really young, this you call it being a chameleon. It is basically your ability to observe and repeat comes to the forefront of your necessities as a child, which is not healthy, but it produces a very specific character type as far as what you're capable of versus what somebody else's next to you might be capable of, you know. Like something happens and most people will freeze in a situation, you're like, you're a few steps ahead.
There's a story that I tell all the time. I got into a really big fight at a prison and I got beat up really bad. And right when they were getting ready to transfer me out, they locked me in the room again with all the guys that had just beat me up. And I had chains on me. I was cuffed up, my ankles, everything. And before they opened the door, I was like, I'm not going to say, no, don't put me in there, because in prison, you just don't
blood
do
in
that.
Blood in the water.
Yeah. So I said, all right, you're going to have to put on the best acting job you've ever done. And when they opened up that door, I went in there and I walked all the way to the back of the room. And I didn't show no fear, sat down. Nobody even came near me.
Was everything fucking hurting inside of your being?
I mean, my cheeks were like clenched together, you know. But I knew that I had to do it. I had to. You know, it's crazy because there's a lot of rules in prison. You know, don't lock up, don't snitch, don't. There's so many rules in there, and if you're not tough, you know, it's gonna eat you up and just spit you out. And if you don't know how to be tough, it's even worse.
Yeah, that's not a place where you go to learn to be that.
No.
You have to have some prior experience.
Yeah.
The way it's described, it's almost like a concentration of some of the worst human behaviors that we experience out here.
Yeah, I mean,
but there's no place to hide. There's nobody to hide behind. There's nobody to call. It's just you guys in there. So this whole rule system is... It makes sense,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, it provides, you know, guidelines for people, you know, getting there and stuff like that. But at the same time, it makes a lot of people crash.
Yeah,
a lot of people crash.
When you say crash, what do you mean?
So they get to a prison, they make a mistake because they're not used to being in prison, and their own people, you know, stabs them, beats them up really bad. You know, there's
what's one of the biggest sins you can commit in there? I know snitching
is one,
but like thievery. What if thievery?
It's just stealing is really bad, especially if you're part of an organization that most people in there are. Like if you steal and they know, oh man, it's over.
It's over,
and it's not like a little high school fight where it's like a couple of punches. No, I tell people in there, they leave you on the floor shaking, like fighting for your life. Like you're not.
Yeah.
You don't just get up and like, oh, they beat me up today. Like
it's not it's not a high school Cholo gang jumping you in. It's not. They're just stomping your ass on the ground.
You're going to the hospital. You
know? All of us that have never been through that experience, all we have is people like you talking about some of this type of stuff or Hollywood. And it's very different, obviously, being in there. You describe this, like, end of the line, going into that that prison environment, that end of the line towards your times in and out of prison. where's God in all this? Is he around? Do you see him? Are people in, like, I hear a lot of people talking about shock collars and all this other prisons, cultural stuff. But like I, every now and then I see spirit, like I see God in these settings, in the worst prison settings. I mean, I've been through some of the prisons here in Mexico. And and even in the corner, you'll see a cross. Mm-hmm. You'll see a Virgen somewhere. Or now you'll see, you know, a skeleton saint or something. But, you know, where was that for you? Did you have any of that inside? Was it a comfort at all? Or was it just something completely alien to you?
I wasn't really religious through my, I was raised Catholic. And then as I went into prison, you know, I mean, I would pray when I got caught. I would pray when I needed money. And
to who?
to God, you know, like.
But like when you say, like, when, like everybody has this concept of it, right? In my mind, when I would go out and do shit, I would pray too, right? And I envisioned this old dude somewhere in a fucking throne in the sky or some shit like that. It's gonna be, you know what? I'll let you survive this day. I didn't have a concept of what that was. So what were you praying through?
I didn't know nothing. I really didn't. And you know, I saw, you know, a lot of hardcore Christians in there that I had a cellmate that he was somebody outside in the world in Mexico, you know, and he had done a lot of time and I still had some time to do when I was there, and he was a hardcore Christian, like. And he was,
isn't that wild?
My cellmate, and just the way he treated me, man. Like, he fed me. Every Friday we would watch a movie together and like drink a pop together, like fellowship, and real positive, man. And I used to be so embarrassed because like I would go on the yard and I would be like smoking weed, and like I would be coming back and he'd be like, "Ya le quemaste las patas al chamuco."
Quemaste las patas al diablo.
And I don't feel embarrassed, you know, and shame, but it actually helped me because I started trying to, like, I started thinking about my future for the first time in my life. I said it also, like, when they interviewed me for my story on the National Geographic. Like, for the first time in my life, I said, man, what am I going to do, man? I'm, like, 40-something years old now.
What did you see in him that made you question your future? Or what did he show you?
He had like this peace, man, that I really didn't understand inside prison, and I didn't understand it until years later when I started my walk, and you know, I didn't start my walk until years after I had been out.
Yeah.
Now I understand, and I admire him even more now because I'm like, wow, in a place full of so much evil, so much bad stuff, just in the talk, that's just everything in general. This dude like lived that walk and talked that walk. So to me, that was like, so gangster. That was like gangster to me.
Yeah, it's always been a weird thing. I've had some of the same experiences meeting like the epitome of a Christian. Because there's a lot of people that talk about being Christians,
I know.
But there's not a lot of them that are acting like Jesus, like they're not Christ-like, you know. But every now and then I encounter these people that carry that cross, who are like the epitome of somebody will give the shirt off your back type individuals, who have the blackest pasts that you could imagine. These gangsters, these very black people that have a lot of weight on them, but somehow found a way of redemption, I guess. And yeah, you see that experience in them. And I've talked to a lot of priests in my life. Some of the conversations I've had with some of these people that have found themselves after their own wars or whatever. Yeah, those individuals talk, they have a different air about them. It's the peace they find with it. I haven't found it for myself.
I know we were talking when we were. Did you notice how we all spent, you know, a set amount of time with each other at the house? I thought it was pretty cool how we spoke and stuff. And
yeah,
you know, I guess I could only speak for myself. But when I got on my knees that day, this is 2021, November 6th. I got on my knees. Something happened. I couldn't stop crying. And it's one of those cries, like I was telling people, like there's different cries. Like the cries when your boogers are coming out and like you can't catch your breath and like you almost feel like you're pooping on yourself. Like that was the kind of cry that I was feeling, and I couldn't even look up. And I just felt like all the guilt and everything just started leaving my body. I can't really explain it, man. You know, I don't want to, you know, because
some things are
just better like that.
Are better like that. And also some things are legit unexplainable. When we were talking, like these conversations we were having with everybody, I was the only pig there. Era único pinche puerco ahí, you know. I was the only pig. I was only puerco there. We had some people that had a very black past.
Yes.
And I know some of them there, which is the environment that I was working in, and all this shit was very black. But what was fascinating for me, though, is that all of them are like, they're all family men now. You see, they were like, hey, like that's... but when I started talking about everybody, like everybody started kind of sharing their stories and some of the issues. And when I started seeing everybody kind of like going to sleep for the night, it was very obvious who had been to prison. How everything was really fucking neat on your end, you know? I was just fucking laying in a fucking beanbag somewhere in the corner. I guess the honesty that some of that life experience gives you as far as like being able to, one, talk about it. Because not a lot of people want to talk about some of that shit that happened in the past. I'm one of them. I really have a hard time with war stories or speaking about shit that I did in the past, yeah. Specifically some of the more fucking heavy stuff. I just have issues with it. I grew up in a culture where some of that shit wasn't talked about. Yeah. Or at least I learned from people that would not talk about some of that shit. On your end, you know, where you are now with it, like after going through a lot of that and speaking about your story a lot of times online, like what's your relationship with that past and being able to speak about it?
I mean, at the beginning when I first started sharing my story, I'm not gonna sit here and lie. Like it was about me, like glorifying myself, what I did, who I knew, blah blah blah. Like it was the old JC. I call him the old JC.
Yeah, you know. Was there I don't know, a glee, like an insecurity, like hey, let me show these fuckers where it come from.
You know, and it's crazy because I come from a time where nobody even knew your real name. Everybody knew you by your nickname. We live in a time that everybody knows everything.
Like, yeah, you could figure shit out.
Like they'll do a live while they go do a drug sell.
Yeah, like, yeah, everything's in the open.
Everything's in the open, but like, I don't know, man. My life started to change, and I started to feel different, and I didn't even want to talk about it because I felt I was glorifying it. But then I had to learn how to tell it in a way where I could help somebody.
I wanted to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of our Patreon members for their generous support. It's the only way we can bring some of these amazing people behind the microphone and have some of these amazing Midnight of the Soul conversations for you guys. If you're not already a part of the Patreon community, please consider joining us. We have our giant online training catalog for you guys to have access to, as well as some exclusive Sneak Reaper Industries merch drops for you guys at the Dead Drop tier. I would also like to thank the company Sneak Reaper Industries, one of our main supporters and a company that provides some of the most amazing urban wear, survival specific, and cutlery out there. Your support not only makes this show possible, but also supports some of the charities that we run, including the Fighter's Kitchen out of Puerto Escondido, where we're supporting some up-and-coming fighters under the tutelage of Eddie Farrell. Thank you for your support, and again, please consider joining us on the Patreon. And now back to the show.
Yeah, so for me, it's like, you know, the past, most historical books are bullshit. And they're bullshit because of this. When you look into the past, it only makes sense when you're looking backwards. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking forwards, it's a fucking mess. You're running on a dirt bike through the fucking trees and every branch is hitting you on the face. Nothing makes any sense. It's only now that we look back and we try to make sense of shit. But if you're in a bad place, like I had some of that as well. Or like if you're in a fucking bad place, you glorify some of the horrible aspects of what you did, or you worked for an organization. I worked for an organization, a government organization, but it's almost criminal, that I'm not proud of now. Like, I'm not proud of the institution that I used to work for. I don't want to be that anymore, you know? Like, everybody's like, Ed, like, do you reckon, like, I have kids in Mexico ask me, hey, how can I get to where you are? It's like, avoid it. Fuck this. Fuck this place that I'm at. You know, being 42, feeling 65, having all these fucking issues. Like, no. No, you don't want any of that
You're
shit.
You're 42, Ed?
Yeah, 42. I just turned 42.
You're younger than me. Wow.
El culo nada más. If you see, like, I've had that experience. Did you get that experience where people were, like, seeing that happy JC about his experience talking online? They were like, hey, how can I get to where you were? Or like, did you get that experience where you're like, maybe I shouldn't be talking about this shit in that way?
Yeah. You know, when I first started my channel, it was all about drugs, gangs, what everybody wants to listen to, you know, yeah. Prison. And, you know, people, I think it's a lot of people that have never lived that life that want to hear about it.
It's exciting.
It's exciting.
It's like
an action movie.
It's like chicks watching true crimes mm-hmm. at night. They're like, oh, this is really exciting watching these people being murdered in the middle of the night for no reason. I get it. I understand that. But I guess for me it's become, like, I went through sobriety. Like, I went through this fucking process of sobriety. And if people online that followed me online for, like, when COVID was going on, I would do live videos of me downing, like, these cans of fucking Foster's beer, right? And I would do these live videos with a few of my friends, and we'd just down beers to try and just keep sane, I guess. It's horrible. I don't like that anymore. It's pretty embarrassing that I fucking did shit like that. And I started shifting kind of my attitude as far as going through therapy, stopping drinking, started shifting my attitude into figuring out, like, what would I have wanted as far as a guide when I started this process? Like, what should I have known? And I didn't have anybody like that. So I said, you know, I should probably write some of this shit down and, like, build a roadmap for other people, I guess. Or, like, I have a platform. Why not use it for something cool instead of just posting cartel videos of people getting blown up in the middle of a field with dynamite or some shit like that, which was that's what really got me on the map, sharing some of that shit. So I had to shift, though, because you can only be that for so long, and it's tiring seeing some of that shit over and over again. On your end, I saw that shift with some of the older interviews into some of the newer ones. Aside from the change that comes, you know, from high, like, what else has changed for you? Like, a lot of us wear our history on our bodies, right? A lot of us wear our histories on injuries and shit like that. And some of us will put our pain in people around us, right? And our lives fall apart because of it. And we end up somewhere kind of like, I'm currently on my year 3 of being kind of on my own. like when you were going through that process of change, like what changes did you start with? You know, this whole leaving that past behind, reconciling it, and turning it into now a tool to like legit make a change in others.
I had to learn from scratch. I always tell people I wasn't a part-time criminal. Like, I was a criminal 24/7. I spoke like one. I didn't know how to read and write, but I knew what ounces and how many were in a pound and how many were in a kilo and all that. And I knew how to weigh money, you know. So when I started to change, I knew that I was going to have to start maturing too. You know, not only just the changes that God and, you know, he was giving me in my heart and everything, the peace, but I knew that I was going to have to start maturing.
This whole aspect of living that life, like I lived the life of running around and being a fucking kid, basically, mm-hmm. because that's what we are, immature, Peter Pan, lost boy motherfuckers. And then that shit stops, and like, oh shit, I better learn how to fucking do my taxes.
And that was the thing. Like, I started to want to like learn, and you know, I had to learn the basics, man. I started from, you know, how that do not cross light has the when you cross and you can't cross.
Yeah.
I started with that. I was like, I have to do this. If it says don't walk, I'm not going to walk. If it says walk, I'm going to walk. And I had to like, and I remember there was a shift in me where I started doing what was right. And then one day there's a no left turn where my condo's at. Right. Like, so I would take it every time.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Every time. And then one day I rode up to it and I was like, nah, this ain't right. It takes me 2 minutes to go the other way. So I turned around and I went around and I started doing that every day. And I was like, look at how easy it is to like learn something different as long as you keep doing it. And it's like my, I guess you could say my calling card too at the gym. I stick to the same exercise over and over again.
Is it routine? Is it you talk about your past life. Imagine there was no fucking schedule on the wall and no vacation period that you had or any of that shit, right? I didn't. I worked for 12 years and went on vacation twice, and it was forceful. So I didn't have any concept of going on vacation. For me, is like an alien fucking concept. I don't even know what that even means. But leaving a job where you're just fucking on 24/7, you know, you fucking sleep in fucking in your pants and shit like that because you have to be ready and stuff like that.
I learned a lot of stuff in prison, now to tell you the truth, bro. Like time management, like being there every day. You're forced to work out every day, whether you like it or
it's
not.
It's regimented.
Like you have to. So like you learn to be on time, because if you don't, you get beat up. So like, so I learned a lot of things in prison that I tell people. I don't cry about what prison took away from me. Like I actually, I'm happy what prison taught me, because I went in there like a little animal.
What are you angry about it taking from you?
Honestly, are you
at peace with it?
I'm at peace with it because...
Not even the time?
Nah, bro, you know, and later, I guess, when we get into my childhood and everything, you know, I was such a lost kid. I was such a little animal that prison saved me.
Yeah. Was it the structure around that, basically? You didn't have... I mean, if... You wild outside, I can fucking envision, right? You in a box with other fucking people keeping you in check, I get. But you motherfucking wild, like out.
You know, I've always been lucky enough, I guess, that the older guys always took a liking to me because I would take care of business.
Yeah.
So they always taught me some kind of leader skills.
Leadership skills.
So like
I
learned, I was telling someone yesterday, I actually learned to thrive in prison because of the older guys that kind of took me under their wing and stuff like that. Like,
mentor figures, which are very important. I talk about this a lot. People complain a lot about the youth, but nobody takes their fucking time with them. which is, mm-hmm. you know, we have a shit ton of kids who are finding mentors online sometimes on TikTok or on YouTube. And some of these people are great. Like, I've discovered some fucking amazing people like yourself online that have, like, I've seen their character arcs, you know? But others are, like, all about themselves, about the ego, mm-hmm. about temporary shit. And, you know, we have this very superficial view of life now. This whole aspect of, you know, older people being boring or boomers or whatever the fuck you want to call them. Elders are very important, like in every culture, from prison culture to the outside world. But we don't find a lot of them out here, though, which is the interesting aspect of it. Like, I don't see a lot of people being mentored like that, like you would see in a concentrated group of people in prison. Because there's no consequences out here a lot of times, I feel.
Well, I believe, too, that, you know, I mean, naturally everybody's selfish.
Yeah.
Like, I had to learn to be selfless. Like, I had to learn, and it took me 2 years of training, pretty much, you know, to, like, at the time, you know, asking my wife, hey, how was your day?
It's a shit. It's a fucking, I know that shit took everything. It took every fucking thing to just ask that.
Probably. You know, and I talked to some of my clients and they're like, well, you know, that's natural, JC. And I was like, no, it's natural to you.
To you, it's fucking natural. Because
you grew up in a normal house or yeah. whatever, you know, whatever kind of house. But, you know, I had to learn to, you know, I survived on the streets by myself, you know, from the age of 14. All the way until I ended up in prison in Mexico. Like I ended up in prison in Mexico at 17. Yeah. And I had to survive.
But the aspect that a lot of people don't understand is the whole, if you're 15, where are you at 15? Where are you at 15? Where are you?
On the streets in Chicago.
Streets in Chicago, you're 15. You run into a dude, he throws a fucking brick at your head, it splits open bloody. Who do you call for help?
Yourself? Or your gang?
A gang of people that their response is not going to be, oh my God, are you okay? I'm going to take you to the hospital. Who did it? Let's go kill this person and get ourselves into further trouble. Yeah. That's who you had, which is basically you're on your fucking own, basically. The aspect of fucking that independent aloneness aspect. You have to mature at a rate that is abnormal for any human being, basically. I mean, a lot of shit gets hotwired to your brain.
Even, and, you know, and I tell people this all the time that doesn't, like, know my full story, because I was raised on both sides. I was raised in Mexico and, you know, Chicago. Every summer I got sent to Mexico. So, like, yo pensé de, I was a pandillero in Mexico. I started in Mexico. I didn't start in Chicago. Chicago didn't teach me how to be. Like, there was already malandrines where I'm from in Mexico. And I started getting into stuff at a very young age. I was 9 years old hanging around with 21-year-olds.
You were learning the secrets of the Matrix. Oh, you can just steal this shit from Mexicans. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's crazy because then when I got to the United States, it made me a little bit tougher because I knew how to fight with my hands, because in Mexico, the gangs would meet up.
Yeah, they would
fight. They were riñas.
Yeah.
And I got used to, I mean, that's what I would do with them. You know, we would fight like that. And so when I got to United States, I got to 26th Street, first day there, I got into a fight. And from there on, I just started my little career, I guess.
Yeah, it was violent. And when you would get into a fight, the violent aspect of it, you're fighting somebody, and I get the aspect, like, I, like, putazos, I know that, like, it's been pinchina y toda chueca, and I don't have any teeth, but when you're a kid, you know, you're on my side, I had my mom telling me, no, you know, Catholic, but then I didn't have her because some shit happened in my life, and basically at 13, both of my parents basically just disappeared in a lot of ways. I remember the violence from me came from the fact that I wasn't safe. Right, so I had to. If my parents are not going to make it safe, I have to figure it out. Right, so I would go from 0 to 100 on a fucker if I saw like a small smidget of encroaching on a thing that I would. If this gets seen, I'm going to be targeted for violence because I'm weak, because that's the culture I'm in. So I would just explode on fuckers. And, you know, sometimes I'd win, sometimes I wouldn't. Sometimes I'd get the shit kicked out of me. Yeah. But through all of them, I always have this clear image in my head of myself looking in a mirror in a bar somewhere, cleaning off the fucking lumps of blood coming out of my nose and being very happy about it. Like, I was like, this was great. This was great. But I didn't realize that it was the beating that I got. The beating aspect of it was what I was like recognizing as a baseline.
Well, you know, you get endorphins too when you get beat up.
Yeah, but I was thinking that I was celebrating a victory or that I'm a fucking man. No, I've been beat in my past, and basically I was just reliving some of that fucking trauma, and my body was back to something it recognized as a fucking normal state, I guess, which is fucked up. The aspect of being able to take care of yourself. I mean, you're in prison and like you have to go work out and shit like that. Where does the self-neglect come into play over there? Like, how are you fucking yourself over? Because I know you, like all of us, that's the way we do it. You know, we self-sabotage in a lot of ways when we start kind of making our way out of that. I know for me, like, it was substances.
Yeah, I mean, for me also, you know, it was substance abuse, especially. And it all depends, like, what yard. If you get to a yard where it's popping, and what I mean by that is there's cell phones on the yard, there's drugs on the yard, there's liquor, like, it's popping. Like, it's a good place to do time. So
hay un Oxxo en el patio. There's a fucking Oxxo basically there. It's easy.
So you base your time depending on what yard you land on, and sometimes, you know, I would be a good boy because there wasn't really nothing to do, so I wouldn't have a wrench to throw in.
Yeah.
But then you would send me to a yard where there was 10 wrenches I could throw in the mix, and I would end up in segregation and this and that, and but one thing I have to say though, you know, I didn't get in trouble a lot in prison. The times that I did get in trouble was serious. You know, I got stabbed or, you know, somebody, I got beat up really bad. I don't know, man. For some reason, I really follow structure. Like when I was
it's probably a defensive strategy that you have. If you can just figure out a structure. Keep your head down.
Yeah, I just keep my head down, and I did my time, you know. And it was so funny because when I would get to these yards, they would be like, "Hey, you know, watch out for so and so and so, because you know he gets crazy, and then he'll just stab anybody." And I would keep my head down, and I would do my time, and nobody would mess with me, man. When I came home in 2013, a lot of the races like cooked for me because. I always carried myself with like just respect. I just respected everybody. And when I left, I found out how much that had affected other people too inside prison, because I had the blacks cooking for me, the whites, the homies. Everybody cooked for me the last week I was getting ready to come home. You know, and I smiled because like I knew that I was leaving a different person from that yard.
Yeah. Did you feel like a graduation? Is that the closest thing to a graduation you're going to get?
That's the closest thing I came to a prom. You know?
This is a good question. Like, what's the, like, coming out of there, you, coming out of that environment, and now you're out, right? What's the first thing you do out when, like, when you have these fucking moments of your fucking life experience that you're out? What are some of the fucking first things you do out? Like, what's the mindset of a fucking dude that just spent a few years in and now you're outside in your civilian attire with a few bucks in your pocket?
I mean, if I'm gonna be 100% honest, the first thing 99% of inmates think about is girls.
Mujeres.
The first thing, and it's the first thing that gets them in trouble too and sent back. First thing.
That's interesting. So like yes, of course, right? Fucking viejas, no? Like panocha, which means brown sugar here. They get into trouble because, well, they don't have any fucking, you know, they don't have any money to probably attract it or to get it, I guess, right?
They don't have no money and they don't have no emotional experience, man.
So they just like, oh, let me go rob this gas station to buy these flowers for this chick so I can figure it out, I guess. Yeah. And then it's fucked.
And, you know, and that's what I tell people, because I went to a meeting last month, a probation meeting. They were like, these inmates need jobs. They need jobs. And I was like, they don't need jobs. Yeah, they need jobs when they get out, but they need like psychological help. They need mental health stuff because...
adult school shit.
Yeah, because you go into prison, man, and you're in there with, I say, the most violent and most broken babies.
Yeah.
Because there's no maturity in there. It's very, very rare that you find maturity, and it's usually like lifers that have maturity there. But it's a bunch of kids throwing up gang signs, a bunch of kids wanting to beat up each other. And I can't mock it because I was that person at one time, but this is why I speak about it so much, because it's not cool to go to prison. It's not cool to lose, you know, 17 years. But I guess it's cool nowadays because, you know, it's all over, you know, YouTube and everything.
The excitement aspect of it, I guess, seeing the culture from the outside, but it's almost like a spectator sport because nobody wants to fucking go through that themselves,
who,
I guess.
Who would want to go to prison? There's a little test that I make most of my clients do, and it's called the 24-hour isolation challenge. And they have to pick the smallest bathroom in their house, take their books, whatever food and water they're going to drink, and you're going to sleep in that bathroom for the next 24 hours.
Shit.
You're not going to talk to nobody. You're not going to have your phone, nothing. You're going to just sit in that bathroom without leaving. Do you know that, like, maybe 2 people out of 10 can complete that? And these are people who probably have never been to prison. So it's like...
Now that you mention it, it is a fucking pretty interesting self-discipline test. Just fucking take a few bottles of water in there with you.
And just sit in there, you know, and that's what I tell people, it has been one of my biggest superpowers when I got on my knees and I found my walk, was I sit still for 30 minutes every morning without moving and I just talk to him.
I can't fucking do that.
I know we were talking about it. I told you sit on your hands, so you know.
The stillness aspect of it, that's where we're on opposite sides of the spectrum, you and me. But that's pretty interesting. That is a hardcore test. If people really want to have that, if people want to even approach what that could feel like,
it's like we talked that, like, you have to sit down one day and listen to those demons. You have to. You have to start a conversation, or else they're never gonna go away.
When you say you're those demons. Like, for you, is it just the past screaming back at you, or is it like, what do you call those? What is that?
I mean, my whole life. I mean, you know, part of it, you know, my molestation, my rape, prison, the watching so many of my friends get murdered, then coming to Mexico, the murder over here is completely different to the murder over there, and it just, everything in general. By the time I came home, I was a freaking mess.
When you say, like, because people hear voices, right? Like, I'll explain what it is for me. For me, it's being in a sunny park in the middle of the summer with my daughter and holding her hand, and then seeing a dude in a fruit cart pull out a knife and cut fruit. And me going into a fucking memory of an experience that I had. and this electrical nervous system shock goes from my head to the back of my eyes, to my neck, to my chest, to my legs, to my hands, and now I'm hyper aware of shit, and I have this overwhelming sense of dread.
Yeah.
And this memory that is now very much present of some horrific thing that I saw that is there to remind me that wherever I am right now, I don't deserve.
Yeah.
Or that's my way of pulling myself out of a moment like that to fucking torture myself.
It's, you know, now let's take that and multiply it by 40-something years. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I tell people, I just learned how to turn off my flight and fight mode just recently. It's been on for 30-something years. I mean, like you said, it could be a smell, it could be a noise. When I go to the prisons to speak, every time those doors unlock, it does something to me.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna sit here and lie. I'm not a tough guy, man. Like I have feelings now.
I think they've always been there, but like some of us get a rough start, and some of us have to bury those feelings until later.